Good day, everyone. Welcome to the final podcast in September. Today, I have the pleasure of picking the brains of Ryan and Chris from our economics and trading desks, respectively. Ryan, Chris, welcome. It's been another really interesting month on the currency desk. After all of the optimism in the summer, the wheels have certainly fallen off that sterling rally. Recall that the pound came with touching distance of 135 against the dollar and 113 against the euro earlier in the month. Both pairs have since retraced as low as 126.76, I think, against the dollar, and 107.62 was the low against sterling euro, respectively. One cannot say that such a correction was completely unexpected. We've always known that Brexit could rear its ugly head again, and it was always possible for COVID infections to rise as well on the back of the economy opening up. We've also known that without a vaccine, we are very likely going to need to learn to live with this virus for some time. And so the furlough scheme coming to an end in October poses another serious risk to the UK economy. On that specific point, we've learned today, actually, just a short while ago, about Sunak's winter economy plan. I think that might be a good time to bring in Ryan here. Ryan, would you mind actually running us through what Sunak's plan is and what the Investec Economics team's thoughts are on this?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Kieran. I think before touching on Sunak's winter economic plan itself, it's probably just worth putting into context why he's done this. Now, I think as we've all realised and seen into the daily press reports, the risks of a severe second wave have been rising. The daily case numbers in the UK are looking on a worrying trend. You saw over 6,000 daily cases reported earlier this week. So against that backdrop, obviously you had the Prime Minister addressing the nation earlier this week and announcing new social restrictions on a national basis across England, including a curfew for the hospitality industry and the return of the working from home guidance. Now, the risk to this is that the reintroduction of more social restrictions starts to drag, or rather represent a headwind to the economic recovery through the rest of this year. In addition to that, you've got the expiry of existing government stimulus measures such as the furlough scheme at the end of October. So what the Chancellor's done today is try and, I suppose, following on from the government's announcements on restrictions earlier on this week, try to support the recovery and try to further nurture that through the course of the rest of the year. Now, I suppose there's three main elements to the Chancellor's policy plan this afternoon. And firstly, there's a new job support scheme that starts on the 1st of November and will last for 6 months. And that really takes a leaf out of Germany's book and its own Kurzarbeit scheme, which they've had in place. It's a very historical scheme, but a scheme which would effectively see the government subsidise the pay of employees who have had their work hours cut. Effectively, the government will end up paying 30% of hours which are not worked alongside the employees who will pay a equal contribution. In addition to that, in response to the curfew in particular announced this week, the government's providing more stimulus, rather support to the hospitality and tourism sector. That essentially sees the targeted VAT cut, which was previously introduced, extended until March 2021. And finally, you've also got an extension of the terms of the bounce back loan schemes, where the term of those loans have been extended to 10 years from six. So you've got a package of measures, as I say, really designed to try and support the recovery through the last quarter of this year. Now, what we have seen today is that economic growth through the last 3 months has been relatively strong. The question now is over what happens across Q4 as a result of the tightening restrictions into COVID.
Nice one, Ryan. And Chris, what are your thoughts? I mean, obviously, with this new winter economy plan, you know, certainly from where I sit, the market seemed to be very subdued on the back of the announcement today. Whilst it's kind of stemmed the sterling slide, why hasn't there been a bigger bounce?
I guess a large part of it was slightly expected. So we did see it go higher a little bit in the morning session, around to basically where current levels are. And so there's an element of buy the rumour, sell the facts to the move that we've seen today. But I guess you also got to look at what's been done and why it's been done. as Ryan said, the reason why they're using this support system is because things are looking bad, and you know it's needed to help out. But also, you've got to look at who's it going to help out. I can understand the government stepping in to help pay for the hours for the hospitality industry, because at the new cutoff time of 10 o'clock, you can see how people are not going to be working their full allotted hours. But then you look at other industries like the pret a manger or sandwich shops in the city. You know, people are working from home. People aren't going to these shops. I don't really see how these measures support every single business. I mean, I think he did mention it's supporting viable businesses. But if there's a cultural change and we only go to work 2 days a week and we spend the rest working from home, a lot of these businesses are still going to struggle regardless of what support measures they've put in place. So I think there's a bit of a balance to the two. So while I think it was relatively well received, what's been done today, it's not a game changer. And it also highlights the problems that the economy is going to face going forward.
Yeah, I think you're spot on as well. There was obviously a pre-release in the press last night, and it hasn't deviated too much from that. So that's good to know. And Brexit, you know, we've obviously seen so much news about the internal markets bill, and it's posed, you know, quite a stir both domestically and internationally. Do you feel that we end up, or there's a chance we end up with a perfect storm of a no deal Brexit, b a second lockdown if these restrictive measures that Boris has announced this week don't actually work, and then see negative UK rates?
The internal markets bill has really set the cat amongst the pigeons, hasn't it, over the last couple of weeks? And I think if you look at the backdrop of Brexit negotiations today, they were already incredibly difficult. The various rounds of negotiations so far this year making very little headwind on major key issues. So that already posed the risk. And now you've got, as I say, the issues over the internal market bill on top of that. In terms of the probability of a no FTA Brexit, I think we would judge that they've certainly risen over recent weeks. If you were to press me on a specific number, I think we'd probably say around 30-35% of a chance of a no FTA Brexit at the end of this year. I think when you look at kind of where we're going on this, there's time running out in terms of negotiating timetable. At least talks are continuing. Indeed, Michel Barnier, the EU's chief negotiator, is in London today to discuss future trade with the UK, despite the dark cloud of the internal market bill. But certainly that is an issue which may arise further next week. In terms of perfect storm, I think, as I said, we do see there is a chance that you end the year with a no FTA Brexit. In terms of COVID, obviously that's a very real risk at the moment. But I think on the second lockdown, as you put it, in terms of perfect storm, I think the UK government and actually those around the rest of Europe, from what we've seen in the measures so far, is they're very keen to avoid the full lockdown as we saw back in March and April, instead choosing to take other measures instead to try and suppress the spread of the virus. Primarily, their concern is with the shock that such a measure could have on economic activity. So what I would say is there is a risk of no deal, and there is a risk that you do get a second lockdown. But I think, as I said, the government would do their utmost to try and avoid the type of draconian measures which were introduced earlier this year and try and use measures such as what we've seen so far. In terms of negative UK rates, obviously there's been a lot of focus on that over recent weeks, particularly after the Bank of England's meeting last week. Markets certainly latched on to the point that the Bank of England and the PRA would be conducting some work on negative rates. I think from our perspective, at least, I think what the argument we would put is that negative rates are part of the Bank of England's toolkit now. They have explicitly said that. And I think it's entirely prudent for the bank to ensure that the financial system has the operational capability to introduce negative rates if the bank ever chooses to go down that route. Now, that's not our central case. We do think more monetary stimulus is on the way from the Bank of England, but they would instead opt for further QE rather than negative rates. And I think if you take Andrew Bailey as well, the governor, he was speaking overnight and he was trying to at least dampen some of the market's enthusiasm for any kind of near-term cut into negative territory from the Bank of England. Again, he was pressing the point that, look, it's the work that they're doing with the PRA over the rest of this year is entirely prudent to try and ensure that if they were to do it, banks and banks' operational systems could actually cope with the prospect of negative rates being introduced.
That's really interesting. I mean, I'd like to get Chris on the negative rates thing, because obviously sitting on the desk, and you know, when that announcement came, it was kind of obvious that there was a bit of a knee jerk, and the pound started to sell off. Since then, you know, again, things have calmed down somewhat. But what are you hearing in the interbank market, Chris?
Well, I'm with Ryan personally on this one. I think it would be foolish for any central bank not to prepare or consider the possibility of negative rates. And the market's been excited about negative rates for too long now. There's always been negative rates pricing further down the curve for a while. And I think it's wise that Bailey's come out and tried to dampen those expectations. I've always seen it as a last resort kind of a scenario for the Bank of England to go negative. I think even they themselves admit that when they look at other central banks that have done it, it's been a bit hit and miss in terms of the success rate. So I think it's good that they're still having it as a tool to be used maybe one day, but also I think it's good that they're using it as more of a last resort. I mean, that last resort might be the perfect storm that you described, the no-deal Brexit, the high unemployment from when the furlough scheme ends, and a second wave of coronavirus over the winter. That might be enough reason to go negative. But again, I'm right with this one. I think there's other tools that are used first, and you keep this one on a back burner for the rainy day that it is this winter that's coming.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm going along with that too. I think for me, the key thing is the closer we get to a so-called no deal or no FTA Brexit, I think that's when, you know, it really becomes a probability there. Before we actually move things on, I just want to get your thoughts, Ryan, on the actual Brexit timeline. We're almost in October now, and what exactly are the key dates? It's crunch time, certainly. So I'd really like to know what to look out for as we move into October.
Yeah, as I say, it certainly is crunch time on Brexit, and time is running short. In terms of things to watch out for, and in particular set dates, look out for further negotiations between the UK and the EU next week. There are scheduled talks on the free trade agreement. But what I would also point out next week is at the end of the month, so 30th of September, the EU had given the UK an ultimatum to remove the specific clauses from the internal market bill, which contravened the withdrawal agreement. The government so far, obviously, they've updated the bill in order to give UK Parliament more scrutiny over it. But the same clauses which the EU are opposed to are still there, and doesn't look like they're going to be removed. So that could be a crunch point next week. The EU has threatened legal action if they're not removed. So that's probably a point to watch out for. Longer term, or I suppose not longer term, actually, it's only a few weeks away now. There is a European Council meeting on the 15th and 16th of October. That has been touted both by the Prime Minister Boris Johnson and the European Union as the deadline for a deal to be reached. As I say, that's only a few weeks away. Whilst that has been the suggestion, I think we saw with the UK leaving the EU at the start of this year, and all the negotiations that went into trying to agree the withdrawal agreements, I think there's always time for negotiations to go on a bit longer. Now, the reason what the EU is suggesting the 15th of October is that it allows the necessary ratification in the EU. But I think there's always the opportunity for a special council meeting to be held in November if needed. So I think what happens over the next month, particularly at the council meeting in October, is really going to be fairly crucial on guiding us as to where we're going on Brexit and whether or not we will have a free trade agreement by the end of this year.
Very interesting. It is certainly going to be an interesting month next month. And I think, you know, just in terms of levels, Chris, this one's for you, really. I mean, we are, and we've seen the rate, you know, plummet through some of the sport on the way down. If we do, you know, get into the territory where liquidity thins out a little bit in the market, as we kind of saw a bit early in the week, you know, what kind of support and resistance levels, certainly in sterling dollar and sterling euro, which are some of the main currency pairs that our clients trade, you know, what kind of important levels are there that we should be kind of keeping an eye out for as we head into October?
Well, in terms of cable, we found some support ahead of the 126.70 kind of region. So I mean, we do have like the 100-day and 200-day moving average around these kind of levels as well. So at the moment, that's our first nearest support that we're finding. I think beyond that, we're looking more like 124.60, 122.50 as the next key supports on the downside. Topside resistance cable, 130 is obviously a key level. And I guess really the very high top side you're looking at is the, I guess, December high of 135.14 is the major level to the top side. In terms of sterling euro, I guess we're looking at really 110.28 as top side resistance for sterling. And also 107.62 as support. So it would take a decent sized move to break out of those ranges for the time being.
Great. No, that's good to know. I guess one last question for me certainly is, you know, we've talked a lot about Brexit, COVID. We all also know that the US election's coming up. But are there any other stories that our clients should be keeping an eye on as we enter the fourth quarter? And I'll ask you both, really, your thoughts on that.
I think you probably really hit the nail on the head there in terms of, I suppose, the global macro risks. They are around those main subjects. I think obviously Brexit is the key domestic risk near term. COVID is more of a global risk. And I think the big question markets will be asking is, does the recovery slow over the fourth quarter as the virus numbers rise or potentially rise and you get more restrictions put in? I suppose the one additional point I'd make on that really is kind of stimulus. As I think I hinted at a few minutes ago, we think you'll get more stimulus from the Bank of England. We actually think you'll get another £75 billion of QE at the November MPC meeting. Stimulus in the US is a big question as well. There has been a lot of talk and a lot of disappointment around a third US fiscal stimulus package, which the White House and Congress have been unable to agree upon, the Democrats wanting a lot larger number than is being proposed by the Republicans. I think if you were to get another US fiscal package, that'd be positive sentiment. But obviously, if you don't, I think the opposite will be the case. And on top of that, you've got the US election as well.
Anything further from your side, Chris?
Yeah, I think those are the main points that we're really focusing on in the market. I mean, they're all interlinked, but, you know, unemployment, you know, we're looking to see how much that increases over the next month or two when the furlough ends and, you know, people start actually losing their jobs. So I think that's going to be a key factor. And that'll also drive other stimulus measures. So again, central banks and what they do to support the economy. But as you pointed out, it's all very much Brexit, COVID and US elections. And it's all going to happen at the same time. So it should be an eventful end to the year, I think.
Yeah, talking about employment, I'm sure you are very happy to have learnt that a person named Mr. Bale has found employment in North London once more there, Chris. So we'll leave it there. I'm gonna wrap it up now, folks. There certainly is a lot to take in. Please, you know, feel free to reach out to myself or a member of the currency desk at Investec if you wish to pick up on any of the above topics that we discussed in more detail. And yeah, good luck trading as we enter the final quarter of 2020. It's certainly going to be a roller coaster. All the best.